Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about antiques and collectibles with our guest today. Shirley Bauman back with us. She's a certified personal property appraiser, a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She owns Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. We're going to talk about all kinds of collectibles today, zero in a little bit on quilts, and of course take all of your questions and comments. Do you have questions about quilts as collectibles? Other collectibles? Join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And you can also post photos of your collectible on our Facebook page. So I hope you do that as well. And Shirley Bauman, welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to have you back again. Quilts have become pretty collectible. Why is that the case?
Well, it's very interesting. They're connected a lot to our ancestors, the relatives who made them. We've got a lot of people who have them in their families. And they also tell us a story in the antique American quilt world. You know, you can see that they started in colonial times, 1750 to 1850. Yeah. Yep. They're utilitarian. There are two blankets with something in between sewn together because women needed to keep their family warm. After that, in the mid-1800s, the sewing machine was invented. And then they still needed those utilitarian quilts, but the women maybe had enough time to make one fancy quilt, one show quilt. And that's what we see. It moves really from necessity to art in the early 1900s. But then the 1900s is very interesting in this quilt history, too, because during World War One, again, they stopped the artistic quilts and went back to necessity quilting. Yeah. And after that, we see the 1920s where the first calicos, those repeated prints, those bright prints come into play. But then we go to the Great Depression. So then...
Changes again.
Women used what they had to put together to have quilts to keep their families warm, and you then see a lot more dark colors rather than those calicos. So then we go into the 1930s and things pick up again, and so we see the bright colors and the calicos and the dyes become better, and that's what we see then. Well, then we go to World War II. So those artistic quilts stop again, but at that time, the Red Cross first started using quilts as a fundraiser. People could get their names stitched in a block, and when there are enough blocks for a quilt, they'd put the quilt together and raffle the quilt for fundraising for the Red Cross. So then when we get to the 50s and 60s, we don't see a lot of quilt making because it reminded people of the lean times.
Yeah.
So they wanted to put that behind them. So it wasn't until the 70s and maybe the 80s when younger women started to want to pick up that craft again that their ancestors had done. Maybe their grandmothers or aunts or someone had made quilts, and they didn't want to see that skill go away. And as we get into towards the 90s and such, we see a great explosion in people making new patterns and making livings out of being quilters even.
Yeah.
And competitions, the big quilt shows and such, which have prize money and that sort of thing. And that goes on today. So it kind of goes up and down, as so many things do in our collectible world, with what goes on in our world, our economy.
I think a person that you and I both know and we're friends with, Nancy Zeman, probably had... at least in our area, had a big impact on all this.
Absolutely, and she did wonderful work. So many of her quilts were great, and not only her own, she supported other women and people in making fabulous art quilts.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what makes some quilts more collectible than others?
Well, in today's market, what people need to look for is condition. In the early days, the dark dyes were often done, especially the rusts and browns, with iron. And so they have little fragments of iron in and deteriorate faster. So you want good condition. There's also aesthetics. You want, people like a pretty quilt.
Yeah.
And we all like to look at nice things. And then it's how is it made? It's quality. Sometimes the hand stitching, you want to look for that. But in today's quilting world, it's perfectly fine to have a completely machine-stitched quilt, and it can be a prize winner. So that's one thing that's changed from the early times. You also want to date it. Of course, the older artistic quilts in good condition will be of the most value for collectors. And there's so many things to look for. Even as something as subtle as in the early days before the cotton gin was really perfected, you could feel a quilt that had a cotton bat in, and you could tell that there were seeds still left in it. And that's one thing that helps date it. In addition to those fabrics we talked about and when they become popular. So there's a lot of things you want to look at as you're evaluating a quilt.
Oh, and my mother-in-law, Ione Stoudy, is a great quilt maker, and she still gives quilts as gifts for weddings or sometimes for Christmas gifts.
Yes. And there are, quilters who just are prolific, and they make things like valor quilts, which honor veterans.
Yeah.
And quilts for children in the hospital. And they love to make quilts, and they've given one to everybody in the family. So they go and do really good deeds
really,
to help people stay warm and cozy when they need it.
Talking collectibles, we've started on quilts. I think it's a really interesting history of quilts that Shirley gave us. And so you may have a question about quilts as collectibles, or you may have another collectible that you have a question about. And if you do, I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. And if you got a photo, you can put it up on our Facebook page. That's a great way for us to be able to see it and for Shirley to comment on it. Shirley, what are the trends that you're seeing in collectibles the last year?
This last year, what remains popular is advertising, especially the advertising signs, but other forms of advertising as well. But advertising signs have been hot, and they remain so. There's still a very active group of vintage jewelry collectors. They love the sterling silver with, the Navajo and Hopi silver and turquoise items. And of course, things are different parts of the country, but that's what we see here. They do go fast when they're available. And interestingly enough, around the country, I hear from other estate sale liquidators that what we call brown furniture, the stained wood furniture, is coming back in. And that's interesting because it hasn't been popular. And when I do have those estate sales, they are items that are harder to sell, the china cabinet and that kind of thing, compared to maybe a little painted table or dresser that's cute and artistically done.
So the big things are still a little tough to push?
They are, There is a trend to owning less, especially for the millennials, the younger people. They don't want to have sets of china for 12, 15 people because they don't entertain that way. They don't want to be held back when they're ready to move. Our society is so much more mobile right now, and they don't want to have to pack and haul and ship all of those things from the family. And not just because they're from the family, but from the past. They want to be free to go where they need to go. So it's a hard thing, and a lot of people are sad. A lot of the older generation telling my children don't want my beautiful china or whatever. It's a hard thing for a lot of people to come to terms with. But I think some of that is coming around. However, I do not think that we're going to see that old fine china come back again. if we see that style come back, it'll be newly made to look like the old items because people want to put it in the microwave and dishwasher.
You know what I have? You know what I have decided to do? I've got some plates and such that were just old plates, and you can't put them in the dishwasher. I thought to myself, you know what? I'm just going to use them and put them in the dishwasher.
That's one way to do it.
Just the heck with it.
Yes. And if there's one you love in particular, hang it on the wall.
Yeah.
You see that often, you know, in a kitchen space, you can put a pretty plate or the dining room, a grouping of them. I have a collection of aesthetic period, about 1880s or so, brown transferware plates. And I have a grouping on the wall of those.
Well, I have found so far that the plates, at least, that were not supposed to be put in the dishwasher, and I put them in the dishwasher anyway, have just turned out just fine.
Sometimes they will, but especially if they have like gold or platinum rims around them, that'll wear off.
It's going to wear.
Yeah.
It's going to wear off. But you know what?
So are we.
So am I. You know. So what the heck, Kent and Pulaski? Let's go to you here, Kent. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I was just going to mention that I have this quilt that was my dad's. I'm 55. And my dad had it, and I don't know where it even came from, but it's black. It could fit a king-size bed, and it is heavy. I mean, if you needed to keep warm, you'd have one leg hanging out in about a second. What's in it? But, holy my, I know it's very old, and... But wow, is that thing warm?
Right. I would guess that it's warm because it may have wool in some of the pieces on top, but it probably has a wool batting, a very heavy wool batting. Not all of them were cotton. We used a lot of wool from the sheep. And those heavy battings do make a quilt quite heavy and warm.
Wow, it's just, I think the whole family must have slept under there.
That's possible, you know.
That's unbelievable.
Oh, man. Thanks, Ken. Thanks a lot for calling. Brings back good memories. Oh, those wool, you know, it's so warm.
So heavy.
And heavy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well, let's go to Diane in La Crosse next. Diane, hi.
Hi.
What's
How
on
are you?
Your mind? Great. What's on your mind?
I have a Victrola from the early 1900s.
Okay.
With the turntable in it, not the horn. And the speakers are in the inside. They're the, you know, they're like shelves, little shelves in down in the front.
Yeah.
And it has the label on it from RCA Victor.
Yeah.
It also has the label on the back, the shipping label.
Sure.
And I was just wondering, I mean, it's not, somebody had painted the outside of it, but not the inside. They hadn't touched anything having to do with mechanical parts or whatsoever. And it worked fine. Mm-hmm. I just wondered how much that would be worth.
Well, first of all, I want to comment on something. You said you had a Victrola. And I was thinking to myself, was it really a Victrola? And when you said the label said RC Victor, that means, yes, it is a Victrola. Edison made them, Brunswick made them, and technically they're not Victrolas. However, we use that term Victrola almost like we use Scotch tape for Kleenex today. But you do have a Victrola, and that's wonderful. And, yes, they crank up, and they had the old 78 records. Unfortunately, the painting does value it, even though it's still working just fine. It does devalue the piece because we like to see the original finish on those. I can't say exactly where you're at, but with the finish change in the paint, it might be around the $100 range. We can see some. As a matter of fact, years ago I evaluated one and valued one for the American Pickers show, but that was a Brunswick-made one, and we had that one at about $250 or $275, somewhere in there. So They range in that value today, those floor-standing models. But you didn't tell me, is your, oh, yeah, you said it had the shelves underneath, and that was for the records and the music. So
that'll add a little.
Yeah. So I think right around that $100 mark, give or take.
Diane, thank you so much for calling. Visiting today was Shirley Bauman, certified personal property appraiser, owner of Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. Our guest here on Garden Talk, I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer. Shirley Bauman, though, with us until noon. And great to have her along as we talk about collectibles with her. And our lines are all filled, so let's go back to the phones and to Sue in Mequon. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We had a relative that served in the Army in World War II, and he was in Japan. He brought some prints home. As well as I can tell, they're probably watercolor and ink, but I really don't know. And is there any way to get these evaluated, or do you have any sense of worth for them?
Yes, that's an interesting subject because it's very broad.
Yes.
When you talk about some of them being watercolor and prints, those could be two different things. Prints are copies of the original watercolor, intended to be made multiples of. But if they're watercolors, they might be originals. So that's one thing that has to be taken into account. Another item to consider is who did it. And there's usually some kind of
Japanese character,
yeah, that I can't read. I do have some colleagues that I call on sometimes when I think we have something that can read them. But who made it? And then it's the subject matter, the quality. There's so much. So I can't really tell you, but I can say that in my appraising career, I've had some that I've appraised for $25, and I've had some that I've appraised for $175,000. And
wow.
The high end was one that the person who owned it didn't know what they had. And when we got the Japanese character translated, it was the most famous artist in the country. And it was of a cricket in a cage that they used to keep as pets. So the subject, the artist, and one had just recently sold for $179,000 at Christie's, I think. And so that's where we valued that one. So it's a big, broad range. But for the most part, when soldiers brought them home as souvenirs, they aren't in that mega, six-figure value, but more likely in the $100 to $200 range, what we see most often.
Still probably worth it to at least get the name, figure out the name of the artist.
Yes, and you can start by looking on Google Translations and see what comes up. Before you spend the money on a professional appraiser. Not
sure.
That we don't like the work, but start there.
Okay, very good.
All right, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Nancy in Milwaukee, your turn next. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning. I actually have a suggestion for your guest, and that is making use of these wonderful treadle machine sewing cabinets. I have two of them, and I took the machines out, and I had someone build for me a box that fits down into this opening where the machine was. And one of them is used as a wonderful ladies' dressing table, and the other one I'm using as a desk because of the abundance of little drawers that these cabinets have. So I'm urging your guests not to tell people to just throw out these things because nobody wants an old treadle machine sewing cabinet anymore, because with the removal of the machines themselves, they are wonderful pieces of equipment that hold many articles of whatever use you want to make of it.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I've seen some real beautiful ones remade, And I do encourage that. I think that's great for those people who like that item. Remember, though, they're very heavy.
Yeah.
So that's, again, another reason why young people don't want, who are moving around a lot, might not want them. But, yes, absolutely, if you can remake them into something useful, a table, a cabinet, anything like that, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Nancy. Appreciate your call. John in Shell Lake up next. John, let's see if I can get you on here, John. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I inherited a pair of cufflinks that belonged to my grandfather. He's been gone since late 60s. And he was an engineer for the Great Northern Railroad for many, many years. And I got this pair of cufflinks. They are an elk tooth in what looks like a gold mount. Are you still there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. It sounded so quiet. There's tiny little diamonds across it. They're the old style of cufflinks that hook around.
Yeah.
There's no mechanical mechanisms on it. And I know that'd be pretty hard to come up with anything without seeing something like that, but my guess is that they're probably from the 20s or earlier.
Yeah. It's an interesting, they really sound interesting.
They do. They do. And what a nice remembrance of your ancestor. The thing that we have to take a look at, what I would recommend, is for you to take them to a jeweler first and find out what kind of gold you have. It could be gold-plated. It could be a range of carat in the gold, or it could just be a nice gold-toned metal. So you want to know, because that gold value will make a difference, and pretty much the basic difference, the main difference, in the value of those. The diamonds, of course, you want to have a jeweler can test them to make sure that they are genuine diamonds, and also look at them for the quality, the clarity, the cut, the color, that all those things that go into making that more valuable. So, and again, very tiny diamonds don't often hold a lot of value. Usually you need a diamond with a half carat or more to really hold a good value.
I'm sure the diamonds have very little, if any, value.
Yeah. And then you want to look and see if there's any kind of markings on them. So I've had when I did estates, I might see some cufflinks that were marked Cartier or Tiffany.
Oh.
So you want to look for names like that. Barring that, if you don't have those names and maybe it's gold-plated or rolled gold, then they're not of considerable value, more value for your sentimental reasons. So you want to look at the intrinsic materials and the maker to see if they might have a large value, dollar value.
And as you say, the gold, if it's gold.
Mm-hmm. If it's solid, 18 carat, 24 carat, it's going to be good value in there, especially if they're large pieces. Whereas if it's gold-plated, it's not going to have very much.
There you go. All right. So see a jeweler and find out about the gold part of it, John. Thank you so much for calling. Katie in Milwaukee up next. Katie, hi.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Two quick questions for you. One, I have from my mother and her mother before her, I think it's an Indian blanket, a very thin Indian blanket that I found in one of her drawers. It's probably been in that drawer for 50 years. And when I opened it up, this little piece of paper fell out that said 1905, purchased from Apache Joe. And my grandmother's uncles were out in the West at the turn of the century. So it's in great condition. Nobody in the family wants it. What do I do with this? How do I, if I wanted to sell it, how would I do that?
Yep, this is the question I hear so much. And I'll tell you, it can be difficult, but what I would recommend, since you have that history, that family history, which is so important in a lot of these things, and we call it provenance, that what I would do is contact an auction house that specializes in Americana and Native American items and find out when they're doing a Native American auction. And maybe Heritage down in Dallas would be a good place, or they can help lead you to a good place anyway. And get good pictures and measure it for the size and that, and contact them and say, is this something that you're interested in? And then get a pre-auction estimate. And what would they think would be a good reserve price, which means the minimum that they would take for it.
Right, right.
And then look again also when it goes to auction what their consignment fee is, what part they would take away to see how much you would realize. But when you do that, you probably get it into the hands of someone who would really appreciate it. And even though it always costs money to sell, so you won't realize every nickel back on it that it's worth. But it would get into the hands of someone who appreciates it. And who knows, you might really have something very special, so it could be worth looking into.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. Second, really quick question. I think it's my mother's grandmother, who the little lady who came from Germany across immigrated to the United States. They did little quilt stitching samples on their way over there to keep themselves occupied, and from there came beautiful, beautiful quilts. But I have a couple of the little samplers, and I'm wondering how do I clean them? I thought they would be great mounted and framed.
Sure.
But they're kind of old, and some of them are a little stained, and I'm wondering what's the best way to clean them?
Well, when we talk about cleaning quilts, we say put them in the bathtub with just lukewarm water and a mild detergent and let them rest for a couple of days.
Okay.
And just don't do a lot of heavy agitation, but let them rest in that mild detergent. And then pat them dry and, get them air dry. And that should work.
All right. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Gail in Mauston emailed to say she has two quilt tops made in the 1930s from scraps. So kind of like what Katie's talking about in a way. They were never made into full quilts. She has no clue what to do with them. They weren't beautiful. They aren't beautiful art quilts. Nobody in the family wants them. They're in a bag in the basement. Should she just throw them away?
Well, she might, or she might just donate them to a resale shop, and they might find some kind of use for them as well.
Yeah, that'd be another way to do it. Mm-hmm. Let's go to our next caller, Ron in Madison, up next. Ron, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi, Larry. And I have kind of a similar question to your last caller. We were cleaning out the family homestead after many years, and in the hay barn of the homestead is the barn raising ladder from the 1800s. It's two sections, and when put together, it reaches out to 52 feet. We did have an auction, and all the antique dealers and so forth that were at the auction kind of were standing there with their saws cutting up all the ladders that came out of the sheds. But I just couldn't let this one go on the auction. I've never seen anything like it. I would like to donate it somewheres if there was a museum or someplace that would be interested in this piece of our heritage here in Wisconsin. That's what I'm looking for.
Okay, sounds like you've got a special piece. What I would do is go to historical societies, and I'd go to your local county, or if your community has one. A lot of the smaller communities do, and they take things like that. And if that not, then go up to the county and see what they can do. And if they don't have the ability to accept that as a donation, they might be able to tell you where to donate it, because they're connected into that kind of market or that group of people. And different societies have different little museums, and some might have the first settler's cabin, and some might have the first barn made in the community, and that would be a good addition. So go to the historical societies.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, it makes good sense. Let's go to Bob in Franklin next. Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got some items that I believe they came from China. Several large vases on wood stands. There's a couple of pictures that look like they're thread diagrams. They're very intricate and attractive. What's the other? Oh, I also have a wood case with a rather large, looks like a one-piece carving, all soldiers with swords and horses and bridges and buildings that's colored gold. Do you think any of this has any value? Is it worth appraising?
Well, it's hard for me to tell you if it's worth appraising over the radio in this discussion. However, some of the early items from Asia, China and Japan, are really sought after and worth taking a look at. Without looking at the marks on them and the quality and the condition of them, I can't really tell you if it's worth investing in an appraisal. You might look for an auctioneer, a quality auctioneer in your area who handles antiques, and ask that question of them and see if you can maybe drop by their office and show them and say, do you think this is worth going further? Those who belong probably to the Wisconsin Auctioneers Association would be my choice, and they would probably say, give you a better idea than I can over the radio.
Yeah. Especially if they have a look at it.
Yes.
And they can
yes.
actually
yeah.
see it.
See
yeah.
It.
Can you recommend one in the Milwaukee area?
There are a number of them in that area. Betthauser's Auction is a good one. I can't come to, with more off the top of my head. You can go to the Wisconsin Auctioneers Association website.
Okay.
And look for some in the Milwaukee area.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Good luck, Bob. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Speaking of our Facebook page, Adrian sent a photo of a quilt, a beautiful quilt. This is she calls it a Victorian crazy quilt, a wedding quilt, and was made by her great-great-grandmother, who was born in 1865 and died in 1930. It was originally found in my grandmother's cedar chest, and my mother had it framed and in 1996 for display. She says to protect it, she's proud to hang it in her home now. And boy, is it beautiful.
It is. It's a gorgeous quilt. And this goes to what I was saying at the beginning of the show. This was that special quilt that they took. And they used all kinds of things in these Victorian crazy quilts. You might find cigar silks and other things, wool from, granddad's jacket, some calicos from the curtains or whatever they could find. And that's why they're little pieces. But this one is special in that there is a lot of embroidery on it. And
that's
guess that some of that embroidery might have meaning to the family. For example, in the lower right corner, we see three intertwined circles. And maybe that was at the birth of their first child. So we have the husband, wife, and the child depicted there in those three rings. Or the center looks something like holly, and maybe that was done around the Christmas time. Or I don't know where the grandmother lived. Maybe holly grew in their area. So, there might even be more meaning there than just a beautiful quilt.
Yeah, she should do some thinking about that, Adrian. That's really a cool, very beautiful
nice.
Beautiful quilt. Well, Kate in Pewaukee has something for us, so let's go there. Hi, Kate.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Before I get to my question, I would suggest that the man with the barn ladders might contact Old World Wisconsin to see if they would have a use for them in their barns.
That's a very good suggestion. Yes.
And they are connected to the Historical Society of Wisconsin. So.
So I have, I think, probably every pattern. I don't know, McCall's Simplicity, whatever, the patterns from when my mom sewed. And then, of course, I have sewed for years and years. And I was wondering, does anybody want those? My kids keep suggesting that I put them in the recycling, but they would be from probably late 40s, early 50s on up to today.
Well, actually, there are people that do collect those old patterns, especially those that you can see really belong to an era. That you look at it and you can say, oh, that's a dress from the 40s or the 60s or whatever it is. And those are great. And the best market that I know of for those right now is through the internet. And if you have somebody that can help you put those on eBay, like a grouping from the 40s, maybe a grouping of dresses from the 40s and then going on like that, that's how I would recommend doing it.
Okay. Oh, good, good. Thank you so much.
Yep. Sure. Thanks so much for calling. And on to Susan in Oshkosh. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
What can we do for you today?
Yeah. I'm calling about an old quilt, a little bit like your earlier caller. This one was not made in Wisconsin. It's, but I'm pretty sure it's pre-1900. It's silk and very large log cabin pattern. And I doubt my kids are going to want to take it. And I'm wondering about, is there a market for something like that? Or are there other places, museums or someplace like that, that would be interested in it?
Well, there are a couple things you can do. If you know who made it and where they were from, you can go to the Historical Society in that location. You said it wasn't Wisconsin. Let's say it's from Missouri.
Probably in Maryland, I think it was.
Yeah. If you can trace that back to who made it where, you might go to that county in Maryland and see if that Historical Society would like it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are some textile museums. So I would Google those and for Textile Museums Wisconsin, and you could see if they would want it as a donation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it looks like in terms of if anyone would want to purchase it from an online auction or a textiles auction. But if it's, you know, quite old and in good condition, that's a possibility as well.
Okay, good.
All right, good. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Jan on Facebook asks if you could address the need to get a written appraisal of a quilt. She says insurance will not pay your sentimental value if anything happens in transit or a disaster. Only what you have receipts for, replacement value can often be in the even into the hundreds of thousands of dollars, but it must have a certified appraisal to qualify.
That's absolutely right, and that's a very good point. And when sentiment doesn't have value, and to our hearts it certainly does, but not for the pocketbook. There are quilt appraisers. There, you know, I can appraise quilts, or a textile appraiser can do it, but the American Quilt Society has a program where they, I don't know if it's certify or credit, quilt appraisers.
Yeah.
And it's a program they go through and they just appraise quilts. And I know there are some here in Madison, and I think there are some all around the state because quilting is so popular. If it were me, I'd go to the closest quilt society or quilt organization, the group that does the quilting in your area. And if you don't have that, check with the shop locally that sells quilting fabrics and materials, and they can probably hook you up with an AQS, American Quilt Society, appraisers, and you can get that done. If it's a quilt, like some of us have told us, oh, it's something my family doesn't really care about, then think about, would you actually put in a claim for that quilt before you invest in the appraisal? But if it's something that's special to your family, and I think this one is because we talked about sentiment, then I'd go ahead and find one of those AQS appraisers and get that done.
Shirley Bauman, our guest today, she owns Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. Our guest here on the Ideas Network, I'm Larry Mueller. Talking antiques and collectibles today with our guest, Shirley Bauman. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for joining us today. Shirley owns Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. And we'll go right back to the phones and to Tony in Arkansas, Wisconsin. Let's go there. Tony, we'll get to you in a minute. Let's go to Ann first. Hi, Ann.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Yes, I have a Hudson Bay Point blanket, and it still has the label on it. I was wondering if there's any value to that.
Sure, I can tell you about Hudson Bay blankets. And for listeners, they're the ones that are kind of, are wool blankets, a cream color background, and then they have stripes across it. And most often we see red, green, black stripes, but they do come in other colors too, baby blues and pinks. But they are still sought after in good condition with the label on. They usually sell around the $100 mark.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And now let's go to Tony. Tony, hi. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Shirley. Hi. I'm looking at what I believe is a campaign desk from the Civil War. Mm-hmm. On the back side of it, there is a little calendar stuck to it that's got 1886, 87. It says Church and Company, Arm & Hammer brand, soda, and so on. It was my uncle's, and I inherited a whole bunch of stuff from my family. I was just wondering what it might be worth.
Well, aren't you lucky to inherit a lot of things from the family? Civil War items are...
I'm Peak and Tuppen County, to be honest with you.
Civil War items are sought after. I would take a good note of that label because you said it says 1886 and 87, so it might be post-Civil War. The Civil War was in the 60s, 1860s.
That is correct.
So you want to make sure it really is from the Civil War period, because even the same style, same build of a desk from those two different periods would make a difference. If you know who it's from, where it was used, you said you thought it was your uncle's. If you can find information about where your uncle was stationed in the Civil War, what state...
It wasn't in the Civil War.
Okay, so it was just that period of time.
It says, I'm trying to read this upside down, PWNHG, Durand, Wisconsin.
Huh.
CWNH, I wonder if that has, I'm not sure what that means. I would Google that, and I bet if you Google that with quotation marks around, you might find out what that stands for. That's where I'd start. If it's truly that Civil War era and it's in good condition, if it's, you know, there's so many variables, condition, construction, original finish, or having been refinished, it's hard for me to give you a value on that. And certainly without seeing it, what one person calls a campaign desk may be something else like a plantation desk. So there's lots of variations. So I really can't give you a value, but something from that vintage, if it's truly Civil War, construction would tell us a lot. If it's from the later 1880s, mid to late 1880s, that would make it less valuable because we still do have a lot of furniture that remains from that period.
Oh,
so I really can't give you a value, but I do think it does have some value, more than just the sentimental family value.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling.
Have someone take a look at it if they can.
Dan emailed to say he has two items made by Hewlett Packard that are both working vacuum tube transistor devices. One's an oscilloscope. The other is a frequency counter, both in good shape. Any market value for something like that?
Wow. Every time I come on your show, Larry, someone stumps me. And here we are again. I really am not up on all of this kind of mechanical and technical items that are collectible, but my experience says I think this, you do have something that would be of value. We are getting into this whole computer age being collectible, the early part of it, and certainly transistor devices are, so I think pre-transistor devices certainly would be. Mm-hmm. I would look for somebody in the mechanical device, someone who has a specialty in mechanical devices or technical items. And you can find those online if you go to the websites for major appraisal associations. You should be able to find someone who specializes in that and ask them this question.
There we go. Thank you so much. Dan emailed to ask if old oil and gas industry maps from the 30s and 40s are valuable, and if so, where he could sell them. Old oil and gas industry maps.
Yeah, you know, the oil companies, Shell and all the rest of them, used to put Exxon, and I don't mean to just say one name, but they all put out roadmaps, and you could pick them up or buy them at the... A lot of times they were free, or you could purchase them nominally at the gas stations when you filled up. And they are collectible, in good condition. They're not real valuable. They can often go in the $6, $10 to, if there's something real unusual, $20 or so range. And it's most, they're often valued from that period for their advertising value, from the oil companies and their insignias and such. But sometimes, especially in areas that have changed since the 30s and 40s, that's when maps become really valuable, when the geography has changed. And that's why early maps are so valuable. So sell them online, sell them in an antique shop, sell them to a dealer. You could get a few dollars for them, but they're not going to be, you know, your retirement.
Irvin Burnett, your turn. Hi, Irv. Thanks for calling.
No, thank you for taking my call. I have approximately 50 old glass plate negatives, approximately 4 inches by 5 inches. They're still in the old original boxes, and they're scenes from Lakeshore and children in various, you know, dressed up. Various houses, and one even includes the Oshkosh Normal School. I was wondering if there was much value to them.
Well, there is interest in the glass plates and all the old photo items. And exactly giving you values is hard. You know, often with these glass plates, we see some chips and cracks, and that has to be considered.
Almost all of them are in perfect condition. There's no cracks in them, no chips.
That's great.
And they're still in the original boxes from, like, Page, and I believe it was White Knight.
Very good. Very good. Yes, I can't tell you a value. I'm not up on that right now. But they do have value, and there are collectors. And Photographica is your collectible category there. And the ones with children on will be more valuable than your landscape scenes. Your historical buildings might be. So I would have someone take a look at them. I just can't tell you off the top of my head. I wish I could, but I'm sorry about that. I can't.
And where would he go again? Photographica, did you say?
Photographica is the collecting category there. And I just start looking for glass plates online that have sold if you have access to the internet or someone that can help you with that.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for calling. And Well, Shirley, here we are out of time. It's been always, as always, a pleasure to talk with you. And I hope we have a chance to do this again. Thank you, Shirley.
Thanks for having me.
Shirley Bauman, you can, her websites are BaumanAuctions.com and HeirloomAppraisal.com. So that's where you can go to learn a little bit more about Shirley and her business.